And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rogues Gallery. My name is Dustin Adair, and I am sitting in the lovely bunker here in Kansas City, Missouri, with our fearless leader, Jason Hunt.
Yeah, not so much leader anymore.
Well, you gave it over to me tonight.
I've abandoned the post.
So you gave over hosting duties of Rogues to me tonight, so you're going to just regret that all night. In Fort Worth, Texas, is Jeff Hackworth.
Hello, hello.
And then Thomas Townley is in Kingman, Kansas. Is Kingman, Kansas even a real place?
Yes, it's about 30 miles west of Wichita.
Because I'm reading Paper Towns right now by John Green, and like I know I'm like 20 years too old for this book, but I seriously, like, that just like Kingman, Kansas sounds like something somebody put, a cartographer put somewhere. To just be like, no, what I'll steal my maps.
No, and in fact, if you keep on going west on this highway, you'll reach another Kingman, Arizona.
Oh, well then, the more you know, Jason.
Bum, bum, bum,
and then
bum.
Sitting in the dark, watching, waiting, is Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
How are you tonight, Tim?
He totally ruined that by being so
Chipper.
Happy.
Hi there. Chipper. Hello. Hi there, gang.
Oh. That was kind of the point.
Oh, yes. Golly gee. I'm not planning anything.
Tim
I'm
likes to ruin things
right
for
behind you.
You know? Tim likes to ruin things for you, doesn't he?
Everyone should follow Tim on Instagram just to see his frightening hospital pictures that he posts. Because they're the best.
They are. They're very good. Very
so, for those of you who are new, like I am to hosting, it's not like I do this every week with Tim on Zompocalypse now. Rogues Gallery is about the DC comic books and their television shows and their movies and such and things. So that is what we are here to discuss tonight. And I want to start with Powerless because it's slowly becoming my favorite.
Really?
Yes. Did anybody else watch Powerless this week?
I missed this week.
I had to.
I caught because Thomas, you're doing the recaps. I haven't seen this week yet. I just watched last week's episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watched last week's and the first one, but I haven't caught up on this week's yet.
What did you think, Thomas?
I like this week's better than last week.
I do too. I love the world building. This week on Powerless, they lose the Ace Chemicals account. Wayne Security loses the Ace Chemicals account because they're tired of metal grating over their giant tubs of chemicals, and they want to go to a force field, and Van Wayne didn't tell anyone that, so they just designed another easy-to-break metal sheeting to go over the vat of chemicals. So they lost the account.
That's a nice Easter egg, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they did say that flimsy sheeting over flimsy containing sheeting over batches of chemicals leads to about 10 or was it four clown based criminals a month?
Yeah,
that's so, about right.
So then they have to scramble to find a new client, and they find it in the Atlanteans.
Ooh.
So they're building a real. Interesting world, I think.
No, I last week's episode was disappointing for me because it was too much just straight office comedy and not enough DC universe.
Right, and I think they really this overcorrected a lot. You know, I think they have to find a balance because this one went way over into DC Universe because it was like they had Ace Chemicals and they name dropped the people that own the Ace Chemicals are the Canes.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, and then they had the Atlanteans and they had Aquaman references and then they had this new hero. And
Thomas made a good point about the episode and the recap that he did, the fact that Jack-O-Lantern shows up at the beginning to, you know, throw his bombs, and nobody is wearing a Jack-Alert. Nobody, no, I mean, they spent an entire episode developing this thing so people would know when the bad guy's coming, and then, okay, fine, it's in beta, but somebody should at least have something. Bruce, there's no continuity between the episodes.
Bruce Wayne stole it and converted it to the Joker detector.
Well, yeah.
True.
So,
but and, the device is still, I mean, they still have the prototypes there. They
could they do.
Do something.
With I still
people
think
using the rumbrella in this episode.
There was no rubble.
No rubble.
Yeah.
There was a new hero called the Centurion or the Gladiator?
The Olympian.
The Olympian. And like they were all the big thing was they suspected that the bespectacled accountant
who's
super attractive was actually the Olympian, because every time the Olympian would go and say, like, he'd be like, I have to go to the bathroom, and then the Olympian would come and do a thing, and then he'd show back up. But by the end of the episode they had discounted that theory by hitting him in the back with a chair. So that was from the pilot, that was the Hal Jordan joke. Like, they thought somebody was, and it was a great joke. Like, Ron Funches is like, I think everybody's got a secret. All these tours have secret. Like, Bruce Wayne is secretly the Flash. Oh, Ron Funches.
Oh, that's funny.
You're adorable.
That actually sounds like it could be a better episode this week than last.
It was. Once they find the happy medium between, like, fully throwing themselves into, like, the DC lore and being an office comedy, and like last week's episode, she was really, I keep wanting to call her Gabrielle because that was her name.
That's who she's playing.
Was so obsessed with being everyone's friend.
Yeah.
And this episode, she was just like, they were her employees, that she spent more time working with Van than she did with them. And I like that dynamic so much better. So, you know, the lab people did lab stuff.
Right.
And then she was working on with Van on trying to, like, sell to the Atlanteans. And Ron Funch's character is from Atlantis.
Oh, is he?
So that was fun.
That's cool.
I thought you were from Atlanta.
Yeah, that's the joke. I thought you were from Atlanta. I think you're thinking of Donald Glover, and that's racist that you said that.
And that's the gag for him, is the race car. They make the race car a joke in just about every episode so far, because last week there were two. I think there were two.
Well, this week they kind of were all standing around on a balcony talking, and they were just like, you know, like this. They're just like, we're all like different. There's not, it kind of pointed out the fact that, you know, there's not really a white, I mean, Van, but, you know, because Gabrielle, Vanessa Hudgens' character, whose name I forget, which is super sad.
Emily.
Emily.
Isn't it? Emily. Yeah.
Yep, Emily.
Emily.
Yeah, she's half Filipino, and which I think is, you know.
But her dad's Jimmy Olsen, so.
Yeah.
You know. Mine.
But anyway, oh, and they made it, they just, because, oh, and Van's dad was played by
Corbin Burns.
Corbin Burns, yeah. Who is one of my just favorites. I love when he shows up.
He was the dad anywhere. On Psych.
Yes.
He was so much fun in that one. Now, do we want James Rhoda to show up on Powerless?
Is that the guy from Psych? Is that Psych from Psych? Yeah. I never watched that. I never really
it's
got into
show.
That show.
It's a good show.
I keep seeing it on Netflix, and I'm like, eh, maybe.
Yeah, you should try that out. All right.
So there's Powerless. Powerless was fun. And I think that it's fun for me. I like those quirky workplace comedies. So is this what you want me to do?
No, I was just.
Just
was
want just, me to stick my whole.
I was just I can collapsing. Put it, I was can, just collapsing.
I can put it in my mouth. That is a skill that I have.
No, that's okay.
So anyway. He's regretting putting me in charge.
No, I'm not.
So who has thoughts about the girl who is super? Who has Supergirl thoughts?
Supergirl is like Santa. She knows whenever you're naughty and she knows whenever you're nice, but nobody believes her.
They did the thing with the thing that we didn't want them to do with the thing, Dustin.
Well, the they,
oh.
yeah.
Yeah.
Mon-El, she decided that she was in love with Mon-El this episode.
Why?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think I will accept that if we just kind of ends up being that Kara's got terrible taste in men. You know, James wasn't great for her.
That is so Ally McBeal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that everybody was saying at the very beginning of this thing when the pilot came out, when the pilot leaked, and then the show was on, is the fact that it wasn't Ally McBeal in a cape.
Mm-hmm.
And they're turning it into Ally McBeal in a cape. And I this is not a direction that I want to see the show go. Because they were already doing it with Alex. You know, and she's like, oh, I like Maggie. Oh, no, I broke up with Maggie. Oh, we like Maggie. And now you got Alex pining for Maggie, and you've got Kara with Mona.
Well, you know.
And then she's still, you can't be a superhero.
Well, she kind of let up on that a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, but it's
they kind of let up on that a little bit. I had a moment, like, when I was watching it, when Lana Luthor stood up and gave Kara a big hug.
Oh yeah, I thought that was going to be the moment there too.
Jason Hunt was like, they're going to lesbo it out.
Oh, they're going to do this, yeah. And then they didn't. And I thought, okay, I'm fine. That's
I'm good. Tim. I'd like to summon you from your dark corner. because I know that in the comics, Lena Luthor has a very spotty history, but I don't think she was ever a villain, right?
I actually think she's had, in at least one incarnation, she has been a villain. You know, what's interesting, as much as I have complained about various characters, I kind of enjoyed this episode more than I've enjoyed a lot of the episodes this season.
I did too. I liked this one, and I liked the Mars attacks last week really a lot.
Yeah,
I wasn't here, but I liked that a lot.
I had some issues with last week, but I actually, for all that, I still maintain that Mon-El is a completely unnecessary character and just needs to go away.
Right.
He bothered me less this episode because, in many ways, he was, in fact, I was kind of wondering if he was the same character they introduced earlier, because I'm not sure I recognize him at this point from...
Well, I think the
humanity changes you.
Right. And I think that being rejected initially, like, say, going in and being like, look, I like you, and have her kind of being like, no, was kind of a cowing moment. In
humbled him a little.
Yeah,
bit.
In DC Superhero Girls, mm-hmm. which is a doll line and a web series through I think CW. I think it's on CW feed. I'm not 100% positive about that. Lena Luthor,
Cartoon Network.
It might be, but it's online only. Lena Luthor is a villain in that, and you can actually buy her villainous Lego. So I'm very interested to see where the show is going to take this character, especially when you consider the last shot of the show of her with
the chess piece.
But you know, she did pick up the White Knight.
True.
She had the White Knight. So that makes me, I mean, I don't know. I would really kind of hate it if it turned out that after all of this time, Kara's faith was misplaced.
Right.
You know.
Well, and the other thing too is, you know, if you want to get into subverting expectations, you know, this episode did pretty well in drawing that distinction between Lena and her mother,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, mom's evil, mom's
right.
bad. Lena doesn't want anything to do with her. And even toward the end where, you know, Lena's like, okay, I'm a fugitive. We're on the run. I might as well. Oh, wait, Mom. All you want is my DNA palm print to open this door. So right. I like that they're not easily making her a villain if she's going to become one. There's still that, you know, there's still good in her. I can feel it. She's still
exactly. I think
unclear.
I'd very much like it if she were not a villain.
I would too.
Just because, you know.
Do you think she's just going to go to one of Lex's other bunkers and find one of his other powered-up suits and fight crime that way?
I don't want another crime fighter.
I don't want
show.
Another crime fighter either. I would like it. I think I would like it more if she kind of ended up going more morally gray, just not villainous.
Well, she could. They could be setting her up to be another cat to kind of give her advice because she's a CEO. Yeah. She's an executive. Oh, yeah. She's a power, you know, woman of power and, you know, executive and all of this. And best friends with Kara, but at the same time, it's a different dynamic between Kara and a corporate CEO than Kara and Kat because of the Supergirl element. You know, Supergirl is not friends with Lena. Supergirl just knows her by happenstance. It's like, oh, you know,
right.
You know, so there's a completely different. There's not a triangle there. There's just Kara and Lena, and I think that might be a different.
I think they're becoming good friends.
Yeah.
Which I like.
You know whose moms would get along really well?
Uh-oh.
Lena Luthor's mom and Oliver Queen's mom.
Can we talk for a second about how good the de-aging computer effects were on Brenda Strong?
Are they doing that?
Because they flashback, Lena flashback to when she was a child. And, like, the first couple of watching it, I thought it was a younger actress that they just found that resembled Brenda Strong.
Really? I didn't notice that much of a difference except for the hair.
Because they had smoothed out her face. She looked so much better, and it was jarring to me because it was like, wow, she looks so much better than Princess Leia did in Rogue One. Like
I'll have to go back and look because I didn't even notice that
they smoothed her out really, really well.
Yeah.
So anyway,
did not see that.
Arrow. Should we go ahead? We've got 2 minutes before the break. Do we want to keep talking about Supergirl or do you want to talk about Arrow? Does anybody have anything else to say about Supergirl?
Jeff gave you a beautiful segue there with. Lena's mom and Oliver's mom.
Let's make it a slightly short segment because we've got a lot to talk about with the movies and stuff coming up.
Yeah.
So we're gonna end with Supergirl right here and then segue via Mother's Day to Arrow.
Yeah, we can do that.
We'll be right back.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention this weekend, especially if you're a cosplayer, it helps to know what the weather's going to be like. Rain and fur don't mix very well now, do they? That's why every week, Sci-Fi for Me gives you the weather forecast for every city hosting a convention. Those we have on our list, anyway. And that's worldwide, not just in the United States. It's part of our commitment to bring you content you won't find anywhere else. Just click on the conventions tab over at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Jedi, Sith, Tauntauns, no matter which side of the Force you claim, we are your go-to holocron for all the latest Star Wars news, rumors, and innuendo. Imperial Intelligence has got nothing on us. We've got your salacious crumbs every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Central U.S. exclusively on Sci-Fi for Me TV.
SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse. And may the Force be with you.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
If you're into video games, be sure to download the 8-Bits podcast every fourth Tuesday of the month right here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to Rogues Gallery. I'm still Dustin. All those same nerds are still talking to you, so I'm not going to go through their names again, because we usually don't. I've thought about this before, about how we don't, after our break, we don't like reintroduce ourselves for people that are new. But where it's a podcast, like, anybody who's listening to this is like, you know,
I do list the participants in the show description whenever we do the episode and post it. So and we'll you'd go through everybody at the end. I think unless you don't want to, it's
we do that. We don't we? Let's discuss the after school special that was Arrow this week.
So many people online calling out Guggenheim for the script.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was like, could you get any more preachy?
Well, this is gonna be dumb and obscure, and I'm sorry. But it reminded me so much of the Vaxxer episode of Private Practice.
Oh, wow.
The Kate Walsh show?
Yeah.
They did this whole episode about the Vaxxer thing. There was a measles outbreak and a child dies of the measles. And it was just like, you're sitting there watching it and you're like, why are we doing special episode on this right this second?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like, you know, I feel like it was just like, I can't even say what I feel like somebody decided to do. Somebody just was like, can we do a gun episode? I'm like, yeah, how badass? No, let's do guns are bad. Half the cast, the characters of this show shoot people in their whole face.
To the show's credit, I will acknowledge and I like the fact that you had characters on both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really felt like this was an opportunity for Renee and Curtis to have some screen time and some chemistry, because they've got some chemistry. There's mm-hmm. there's a dynamic there between those two, because they are polar opposites on just about everything.
Right.
And Rick Gonzalez, I think, is underrated as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen, you know, we get his origin story in this.
He was on, I think that, he was on Broadway after Reaper ended.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he did stage plays for a number of years until Arrow showed up.
What do we think about him in a suit, though?
I liked it. Huh? I like a little guy in a little suit.
Yeah, but it did feel like it was.
Well, the thing, like, I felt really like it was the people that you knew were going to be on the side of that issue were on the side of that issue. I would have really liked it if Felicity would have been like, you know what? I have a gun at my house.
Yeah.
And, you know, that I keep next to my bed in a drawer.
Well, the other thing, too, is when you get... when you get some of these characters making their points,
mm-hmm.
they speechified.
Right.
And it wasn't just a casual conversation.
Or they just kind of like showed up for the one line like they did with Dinah. Or,
yeah.
Where she just walked through, somebody says, most cops want more guns off the street. And she walks in and is like, not all cops want guns off, you know, and it's just like.
Yeah, it's like an elementary school play where everybody has, you know, you come in and play the apple mm-hmm. and do your line and go away.
The scene between, especially like the scene that Felicity had with what's his name, Mr. Terrific.
Yeah, Curtis.
Curtis, where he was like basically talking about like gun control, and she kept trying to avoid the subject. Yeah. That's when I really would have wanted, I would have loved for her to be like, "Look, I have a gun. I have a gun. I know how to use it. It's at my house right now."
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily agree with you on this subject. We are both young, urban, mainly liberal people, and we disagree on this issue.
Well, and Renee made that point too, because you know, he's like, "I'm not going to give up my gun because there's still a danger out there, and you know, as long as the bad guys have them, see, and that was a salient point,
mm-hmm.
I thought, as long as the bad guys can get them, And I did like the fact that they pointed out right there at the end when Oliver is confronting Edlund in the hospital,
yeah.
And he sits there and he says, "The guys who killed your family bought those guns legally, so that's right, because the registration
would have only been for legal guns.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have done any good." And I like that they've made that point that the bad guys are going to get the guns no matter what. You can have all the gun laws on the books that you can count until you die, and it won't do any good because the only people who are going to be affected by it are the law-abiding citizens who are not going to be criminals in the first place. Tim is remarkably silent.
And yeah, everybody's just sitting here listening.
Well, first of all, I didn't see the episode this week. I haven't watched Arrow at all this season. I don't know why this season. I've had no interest in watching the show. I think it, from what it sounds like, though, is that they missed out on a lot of opportunities to handle a subject that is not an easy subject to handle. And if you're going to go there, then you need to, especially on a show about vigilantes.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you're going to talk about a show where the main characters daily use violence to solve solutions.
Now, Oliver, daily, at one point, Oliver in the episode did say, you know, I'm starting to question, this has me question, because the premise of the show is, you know, this guy comes in and shoots up City Hall. And Oliver is sitting there saying, you know, we answer violence with violence all the time because we're vigilantes. Could that just be feeding into all of this? How do we break the cycle of,
right,
you know, bad guy does this, we do this, and they do this, and we do this.
The only problem I had, because he does, somebody brings it up at least twice.
Yeah.
There, Oliver brings it up once, and I think that Keith, Craig, whatever the one you said, I don't know anyone's name on the show. This is the third episode Curtis of Arrow I've ever watched. Brings it up again.
Yeah.
No,
Renee brings it up to when he's debating right. with
so
Curtis.
Those two bring up, but it's almost immediately swept under the rug. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the episode, they do have a very, like, this is a very complicated issue, and there's not a quick answer to this, and we're going to keep working on it. They're never going to mention this
but
again.
No, they're not. And the fact that they came up with whatever this legislation was that the city councilwoman was able to skim through, like, flip, I'm okay with this. I'm like, you don't write city ordinances or city laws that quickly, and you don't do it with the assistant of the deputy mayor who just started, and you don't do it just two people in an office overnight before the commercial break. Right. I mean, the whole thing was glossed over in terms of the process of actually getting a law passed.
To me, this felt like a mix between the episode of The Fresh Prince where Will got shot and Carlton wanted to go shoot the guy with a gun that he had just bought, and a mix between a bad version of Marvel's Civil War. How the team was divided against an issue.
Over something dumb. And over something super dumb.
It just was like Fresh Prince Will Smith mixed with the bad version of Marvel Civil War.
And you know what?
You said after school special, yeah. And that really is what it felt like. And every DC show has done that this year. Every show has had an after school special episode.
And this could have become, I mean, especially considering that Oliver Queen is the mayor, this gun control issue and the debate about this issue and what it means as vigilantes and what it means as citizens and people who want to protect the city could have become a subplot on the show and lasted the rest of the season.
Well, especially if you put it in contrast with Prometheus, who's supposed to be the villain of the rest of the season. We haven't seen him for four episodes.
I don't even know who that is.
He's the new bad guy, but he hasn't even shown up for, I don't know, what, 2-3 weeks? When's the last time we saw Prometheus on the show?
Dustin, I have spoilers on how the season's going to end.
Uh-oh.
The city is going to burn.
Like it does every season.
What?
Every single season.
Let's have the city freeze this time.
Ooh, there we go.
I would actually be very interested in seeing, and the DC characters, I think, actually are situated really, really well to do this. But the idea of having an entire season of a show, and maybe not Arrow, maybe it needs to be another show, where they actually look at the fact that at the core of all superhero stories is the idea that somebody outside the law commits acts of violence for good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And oddly enough, you have a character on the show, Vigilante. The original Vigilante series was about an assistant DA who looked at the city he was in and decided that he had to do something about it.
Yeah,
Adrian ends,
Chase.
Spoiler alert for a 30-year-old city. He kills himself because he can't deal with a contradiction.
Yeah, Adrian Chase, who actually happens to be the district attorney on Arrow, and
well,
there hasn't been
for the rest of the season. But because in the comic that was the core of the idea, and actually that comic came out was post Dark Knight Returns. So in the middle of Grim Dark World, that whole thing that all comics did, there was a comic that was discussing the fact that there's an inherent contradiction at the core of being a superhero.
All right.
That you step outside the law and you commit acts of violence, which often have body counts and property destruction as well.
Well, maybe we'll get
a really
something
story to tell in the context of a DC TV show.
I wonder if maybe we might, there'd be an opportunity to get into that a little bit with Black Lightning.
Yeah.
Because he's middle-aged.
Yeah.
And he's got the two daughters. And the two daughters are going to become vigilantes.
Right.
And so you could have that discussion where you sit there and go, well, you beat people up. You did it for how many years?
Right.
Why don't you let us do it?
I was really shocked when those casting announcements came out, and it said that they were going to cast an older Black Lightning, and then the two daughters were going to be the younger
mm-hmm.
ones. I was really shocked because...
No pun intended?
No pun even noticed till you said it. Because I would have expected that they would have skewed just like they have with all these other characters for young hot
mm-hmm.
people.
Well, the daughters will be young hot 20-something CWs,
right?
And the Black Lightning Jefferson will be he'll be in a supporting role, so he'll be like Joe West or Quentin Lance, or. Martin Stein, he'll be the older voice of reason type of why you should listen to me because I've been here before and stuff. I want to see Arrow missed an opportunity with Ted Grant because I really was hoping to see an older Wildcat on Arrow and we didn't get it. We got 20 something hot mess CW casting. I'm like, really? Okay. But
sorry.
Anyway. But yeah.
Sorry, so, Jason.
I know. You know, so, see, because when Wildcat teaches Laurel, how to fight, I'm like, well, that should be older Wildcat. That should be Wildcat, especially now that they've got the JSA. They brought the JSA in Legends Tomorrow. You have that connection. There is that opportunity that you can have Wildcat in the show. The real one.
Right.
After last week's episode of Legends of Tomorrow and after last week's episode of The Flash and their teasers for the next episode, I really missed those two shows this week.
I've never really successfully watched an episode of Legends of Tomorrow.
Week. Next week, Legends are in Camelot.
Never watched a single episode of that show.
Camelot?
I just know that one lady's wet
Camelot, all the time. And the Flash is going to face Gorilla Grodd in Gorilla City.
Yes, it's going to be fun.
I love because Tom Felton was like, "Is it in the preview I watched? Like, is it Planet of the Apes?" And he's like, "No." It's like it's Planet because he was in Planet of the Apes. So that
that's
was
right.
That was really funny
and he
to
got
me.
Killed.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
So
that's gonna be fun.
We're going to just like grab the shifter and also the parking brake, and we're going to just reverse like we're Steve McQueen, and we're going to talk a little bit about some movie news.
Steve McQueen or Steve Trevor?
I don't know who that is.
Steve Trevor.
Oh, right. That dude from that thing.
Yeah.
Yes. The next thing we're talking about.
Wonder Woman.
Took me a second.
Yeah. Well,
The designs for the Wonder Woman action dolls has come out this week, and I'm very excited because I am a collector of action figures and dolls, have been my whole life.
And in fact, when you and Molly were doing Reviews for Humans, you reenacted scenes
of movies and TV shows with our dolls, and they're all still on YouTube. You can go and check it out, Reviews for Humans. It's wonderful. You'll love it.
These are really nice.
They're
very
gorgeous.
Impressive.
They're beautiful. And they're articulated. They have, it looks like, several different points of articulation.
Yeah.
And
see elbow, shoulder, knee. Yeah. Is very important.
Like, yes.
Well, because the original Star Wars action figures could not bend to the knee.
No.
Or the elbow.
And so, there's a really bad, especially in action figures, there's this really bad design flaw that they do with female action figures where the ball joints in their hips are in a V shape instead of a square shape. And so they, when they sit down, they splay their legs open.
Oh, right.
And then, so they can't sit in anything, and their knees usually don't bend. Or if they do, once their articulated legs are sat splayed open and they sit, they're like sitting crisscross applesauce or even worse, you could just stick a male action figure down in there and
not that kind of show. But no, you're right. Yeah, that's something that a lot of action figure designs has been one of these where the anatomy doesn't really quite work that way.
And these look very good. Like Wonder Woman looks thick. She's standing on her own, which for a fashion doll is kind of unheard of. She's got a very thick waist, very strong center core, which is, I like a lot. And she's a fashion doll with a gripping hand.
Yeah.
Which, if you ever picked up your daughter, your sister, or cousin, or aunt's Barbie doll, or mine, and looked at it and was like, what is she doing? She looks like she's about to conduct an orchestra or something.
I don't think Uhura. Well, no, Uhura, the original Mego Star Trek dolls. I think Uhura could hold a phaser,
right?
But none of them could hold a communicator very well,
right?
Just because of the way the
I just remember hand was I remember shaped. Being 5 years old and playing He-Man and having Teela. And Teela could not hold any of the swords.
Yeah.
Her hand was her only gripper hand was the circle, and you could slide her staff down in there, but she couldn't hold a sword.
Well, because the staff was her
thing. But that was it. It annoyed me greatly. Anyway, does anyone else want to talk about dolls?
Well, we do have other things to touch on here because. This hit today.
Oh.
Earlier this week, we had news that, we know that Ben Affleck has stepped down as director of the Batman.
Right.
And earlier this week, we heard that Matt Reeves was in negotiations to become the new director of the Batman movie. And that apparently has fallen apart. Because of reasons. And so the last thing that we heard was, and I think it was Collider or Justin Kroll was to, no, it was Collider, because Justin Kroll was talking about Mel Gibson. We'll get to that in a second.
Oh, right, yeah.
But Collider, I think, had the story that Reeves was pretty much, it was a done deal. All they were doing right now was discussing the points.
Yeah.
The final little money number things. And, yep, he's done. He has walked away from the project. And
did you guys discuss Batman or Ben Affleck and Batman last week?
We talked a little bit about it
because I saw a thing this week that was like they were speculating that because Own the Night did so poorly that might have been the reason, or We Own the Night or whatever it was that no one saw.
Live by Night,
whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It was terrible from what I hear. since it did so poorly, it's shaken his confidence, and he was worried about directing and acting.
Right. I heard also that there was a concern that one of the reasons why Live by Night didn't do as well as it otherwise could have was because Affleck was distracted by the whole Batman pre-production process. That his mind was in two different places with all of this.
Or three.
And so now the question becomes, okay, so Affleck's out as director. Matt Reeves is out as director. This is a story of Hollywood Reporter. A week after entering negotiations to the director of the Batman, Matt Reeves has exited the talks. Studio source confirms that negotiations have broken down. However, possibility exists that talks could resume when heads cool. Wonder what that means. The studio is intent on making the movie no matter what, as the Batman franchise has proven to be bigger than one person.
Right.
Okay. When heads cool, does that mean that... See, I go back... I watched a Collider video earlier this week about this whole thing, and John Campea was saying it would be nice if Warner Brothers and DC could just get something right, because every 6 months, because they were talking about, if Ben Affleck gets out of his contract and decides he's done playing Batman. Now, according to what we know about his contract, the two Justice League movies and the Batman movie would fulfill the terms of the contract and he'd be done. So he'd do the one solo Batman movie, and that would be the last one, and he'd be done, finished, kaput. And there's some people that are saying, well, maybe that would be the opportunity to hit the reset button again on the whole thing and start over from scratch on the whole DC filmed universe. And... Wow. I don't think they need to go that far because they're so far behind Marvel now. They'll never catch up if they do that. But Campea makes a good point. We get to this point about every 6 months,
right,
where Warner Brothers is making some sort of a decision or a correction or a course correction or a change or a this or a that or the something to make it better, to make it work, to make it right, to make everybody happy. And it doesn't. We're still hearing rumors that Wonder Woman is a mess. We're hearing now that the Batman script might or might not be thrown out. Justin Kroll over at Variety says they're happy with the script. The studio is happy with the script, but Warner Brothers is a director-focused studio, and they sit there and say, like they do with The Flash.
Right.
They've lost two directors with The Flash, and every time they replaced the director, they threw the script out. I mean, Flash is going back to a page one rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I have an idea.
Yeah.
Let's get the director from the Lego Batman movie to come in.
Well, it's funny that you say that because
I hear that that's the best Batman movie since The Dark Knight.
It was really good. I saw it.
I see it.
I have heard, I've seen it online several different places that the Lego Batman movie got right what all of the other Batman movies have missed.
Because, so what they did in the Lego Batman movie, that they do not ever do in other Batman properties is they remembered that Batman is this guy named Bruce Wayne.
Uh-huh.
And Bruce Wayne has some, serious issues.
Spoilers.
And so the movie, while like Bruce Wayne as a character is only in it for maybe two or three scenes, they use Batman, the idea, the concept of Batman, as a way to explore the damage, the trauma that Bruce Wayne suffered, and his real fear of being close to people. And learning how to trust and open himself up to people and love again in a family way.
No parents.
Yes, exactly. And so what I think what people really are responding to when it comes to the Lego Batman movie is that it's a real examination of a character that people have forgot to examine.
Well, yeah, because one thing that makes Batman work in all of the different incarnations that we haven't seen in the movies yet, uh-huh, is the Bat family. You know, Robin, Batgirl, Batwoman, whoever else you're going to put in, Commissioner Gordon,
which are the people that help him realize that
they keep him grounded, they keep him centered.
Worth being part of something greater than himself.
Yeah.
And
that's the unfortunate thing, because in the comic right now, that's one of the reasons that the Bat titles are getting a lot of praise, although they survived New 52 pretty well. They're one of the big arc right now is recognizing that Batman is part of a family, that mm-hmm. he recognizes yeah. that he's part of a family.
Right.
That's kind of one of the big deals of the comic, mm-hmm. and that's something that the people who are currently doing the real work with the character, leaving the movies aside, every month an issue comes out of whatever comic, that's where the canon is happening.
Right.
And they're looking at it as he recognizes that he's part of a thing. He's not alone. And if you don't recognize that in the movies, it's all very, very cool to sit there and go,
yeah,
I'm the loner. I'm the one person who can save the world. Well,
the way the movies look at his backstory is his parents died and he became a badass. Lego Batman is the first movie that said his parents died and it destroyed him. He is not a functioning human being any longer because of the trauma he suffered.
Now, one thing that I will give Gotham its props for is they actually go into that mm-hmm. with Bruce. Because they can, because he's still a kid, mm-hmm. and you can see that trauma in David Mazouz's performance and the relationship that he's got with Alfred. Alfred's very protective of this kid, mm-hmm. and the bond that's there, you can see 10, 15 years from now where that's going to go, and it does really feel like they're on that trajectory for what's in the comics and what everybody knows is the relationship mm-hmm. with Bruce and Alfred.
Yeah, and I think
it's still a terrible show, but yeah. that part is yeah, I like the fact that they are exploring that trauma a little bit with him. But you're right, the movies don't do it.
Right. And I like
that. So let's just get that director and maybe he'll pump some new life and enthusiasm into that movie.
Mm. Let's just make it all on Lego while we're at it.
Sure.
Everything
Lego Justice League.
Speaking of pump you up,
we
missed something on Wonder Woman. Did you see the rumor?
Oh no, what happened?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I didn't see that.
There is a speculation this week because Patty Jenkins and Jeff Johns both started following Arnold Schwarzenegger on Twitter this week. And oddly enough, and I don't know how you go about doing this because it seems really complicated and stupid to me, but they are looking at the patterns, and apparently they can fairly not really 100% accurately, but they can get close to guessing who's about to get cast in a project based on the production team starting to follow particular actors and whatnot. They've actually been able to get, Patty Jenkins is the director of Wonder
Woman. I need to commission a study right
they're
now.
There's actually apps out there that tell you who's following, who follows who to follow who. And it was like, okay, somebody's got too much time on his hands.
So
Patty Jenkins and Jeff Johns both started following Schwarzenegger this week on Twitter. And it could mean that they like Celebrity Apprentice. It could mean they just think that Arnold's
no
a,
one likes
a
Celebrity
good guy.
Apprentice.
But the rumor, the favored theory is that Schwarzenegger could be voicing Ares.
Oh.
God of War.
There you go.
Because it's just an app, right? You know, it's that that military app that he's selling.
Yeah.
You know. But Ares is going to be a CGI character.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody's
well, those are always fun. It's always nice to just cut all the humanity out of something.
You know what would be cool though? Is if he showed up as Sergeant Rock.
Sergeant Rock
was the Nick Fury of the DC universe when Nick Fury was part of the Howling Commandos in World War II. Sergeant Rock was the DC was the head main character for DC's World War II comics.
Well, not only that, but it was him and Bruce Willis who were the two first guys who were supposed to play Sergeant Rock back in the 80s. Schwarzenegger was the first one, and then he went off and did Predator or Commando or whatever. And
if
then,
it bleeds, we can kill it.
And then Bruce Willis was going to play him, and that project never happened. Man, that would be, wow.
You should see everyone. I just want to point out that how giddy Jason looks right now.
That would be fun.
And that is going to be the last thing
that would
that
be
I
like,
point out.
That's like Billy Dee Williams finally getting to play Two-Face.
Yes. Yeah. Which was, he had like four lines. Don't get too excited.
Still.
So,
we haven't talked about Shazam yet.
I know. We're going to have to stop, though.
No.
It's
a real quick thing.
Okay,
they may have found a director for Shazam, the DC Captain Marvel movie. David F. Sandberg, again Hollywood Reporter, Heat Vision blog. David Sandberg is in talks for the project with New Line. He is the director of the upcoming movie Annabelle 2.
Oh, about the doll.
The doll.
His debut feature, Lights Out, last year.
Oh, right. I heard Lights Out was very good.
A horror film earning more than $148 million on a $4.9 million budget. What?
Yeah. Although I watched the short Lights Out was based on, and it was pretty bad. But I hear the movie is very good. But I haven't seen it.
So does this mean Shazam may come out before Batman?
I would love for Batman. This is legitimate. I'm going to tell you a legitimate thing that I feel.
Okay.
I would love it if Batman got kind of stuck in development hell for a little while. And we got the Shazam movie and the Gotham City Sirens movie and maybe, you know, Flash movie.
Speaking of which, the Gotham City Sirens, which is actually in development.
Yes.
Margot Robbie. Lena Headey wants to play Catwoman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
I approve that. I approve that choice.
That would be good.
Oh my gosh.
That would be good.
That's amazing.
That would be fun. Oh, and there's a new mashup in the comic books. Do you guys see this? Between DC and Looney Tunes.
Oh yeah, I saw that today. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
They look terrible. It looks like that really bad Hanna-Barbera thing they're doing right now,
yeah,
where they made
the
Hanna-Barbera like serious.
Yep.
It really, it hurts me to look at it and think that they're trying to make
but
these.
I tell you what, I have a very fond memory of the Duck Dodgers Green Lantern episode.
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Well, and how cool is this Marvin the Martian?
Yeah.
And the Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
Cover. I mean, that's pretty slick. I've never seen Marvin look that intimidating.
I know. That's part of the part that bothers me, though.
It looks good.
I like my goofy childhood goofy childish. Like, Wacky Racer should not be Mad Max.
Yeah. Yes, Death Race.
Is the red monster like Swamp Thing now?
I don't know.
Oh.
Is the red monster Looney Tune or Swamp Thing now?
What was his name? Curly or Earl or something dumb like that. It doesn't matter. Anyway,
oh! I know who you're talking about. The big fur ball
that when they would shave him down, it would be nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
they did that to him all the time. Poor little guy. Well,
just imagine him being Swamp Thing.
That's all the time we have tonight, you guys. If you enjoyed the things that we said, and even if you didn't, you can write about them in the comments. Write about the words that we just spoke. And no one will read them. I don't know if Jason does. He stays up late at night and looks at the comments and cries.
I do.
You could also send us an email if you want at roguesgallery or to roguesgallery@scififorme.com. We're also on all the places that you would find social media, the Twitters, the Facebooks, the LinkedIns. Probably MySpace, I would just assume. You know, all those places. There's so many Sci-Fi for Me radio shows that you can listen to, so many different podcasts. Zompocalypse Now, which I talk mainly about with Tim Harvey. Although I did confirm that Mr. Curtis Smith is going to come and watch Walking Dead with us this weekend.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And join us. That'll be nice.
Excellent.
I used exactly the thing Tim and I discussed to blackmail him. You're no longer attending bar. So look us up. Look up Sci-Fi Radio on Apple and on podcast.gov and all those places you might be able to find a podcast. I'm sure we're there. I'm sure that Jason's going to go back in after I leave and like there's going to be like a record scratch and he's gonna like, here's what really you needed to know.
No, you're doing fine.
And then follow us all on our personal stuff. I'm sorry. I made it all the way. I made it to 1 hour and 5 minutes. You know, we're all on Twitters and things. You can find us there. Jason's so mad at me. He's never going to ask me to host again.
No, I'm not. You did fine.
So until next week, I have been Dustin. Jason has been joining me at his house.
Yes, for the most part.
In the bunker.
Yes.
Jeff Hackworth was in Fort Worth, Texas.
He still is.
Yep. I still am.
Thomas Townley was in a paper town.
Yep, it's a real town.
And
we're getting a Sonic back.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. Well, you know what? You know what this town needs is a Whataburger.
Oh, my God.
We need a Whataburger.
And Tim Harvey has been under your bed.
Always a pleasure, guys.
All right. Good night, everybody.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2017 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.